Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering, and we start today in Dorchester, where roughly 50 artists are breathing a sigh of relief. And that's because after 2 years, they finally own their workspaces. The acquisition of Humphreys Street Studios by those who make art there is a success story in a long timeline of artist displacement in the greater Boston area. Can the region be vibrant without a thriving artist community, and would we really even want that? So, from the newsroom, WBUR arts and culture reporter Amelia Mason joins us. She has been pursuing that question, this line of stories, for years. Also here, Bill Hardy, who is the current owner of New Atlantic Development, and they helped artists buy Humphreys Street Studios. Bill, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
And Amelia, welcome back.
Yeah, thanks for having me too.
So, Bill, I'm going to start with you. This conclusion with Humphreys was a long time coming. How does it feel to know that these artists are going to be able to work in place and stay in place?
It feels great. You know, it was a hard 3.5 year process. And, you know, getting to the finish line was never a certainty for most of that time.
So really, like, how close to when it was done were you still not sure that it might get done?
Not until probably we started the actual closing process with the lenders.
Yeah. And so just briefly, what is in place now? How did this thing get set up so that the artists could buy it and they could breathe this sigh of relief?
Yeah. Well, this is a model that we have done many times, I think 4 or 5 times previously, where we go in as sort of the experienced developer, the one who can be underwritten by the bank, has some credit worthiness, and we go in, we partner with the artist and set up a nonprofit, and the nonprofit is run by a board of directors, and in this case, a majority of those board seats are taken by the artists themselves.
By the artists themselves.
So they really have a majority controlling interest in the property.
And so now they run it.
They run it. I'm on the board. Another New Atlantic person is on the board. There's a person from the Mayor's Office of Arts and Culture who is on the board. So we're there to sort of provide, you know, the real estate expertise. We are also acting as the property manager. So we'll handle, you know, the day-to-day rent collection, maintenance, and things like that. And they can focus on their sort of bigger picture mission of creating art.
So, Amelia, let's pick up there.
Sure, right? Yeah.
This bigger picture mission of creating art. Give us the stakes. Why is it so important that something like Humphreys Street Studios happens and artists can stay in place for that bigger picture mission of making art?
Sure, yeah. I mean, I feel like every time something like this happens, we are like, why should we care about art? And I mean, obviously, it could be sort of a philosophical question a bit. I will say, I think, you know, when you think about a city and its identity, you think about its culture and its food, which I think connects to culture. On the business side of things, if you look at, like, the parts of cities that are exciting and fun to go to, arts and culture is usually a big part of that. It's a big part of tourism. Developers will actually leverage arts and culture to try to make districts more trendy. I mean, that's like actually happened here in Boston in the SOA district. So I think it's very important, but I also love artists and I care about them. And it is sad when a place that, like Humphreys Street, which is a big old industrial building that art that couldn't be lived in and wasn't being used, and artists took it over and like made it their own and had kind of a home there, an affordable space to work, big space where they could do a lot of things. It's always sad when that places like that are under threat and get turned over and might have less personality or, you know, just don't have artists there anymore.
So I want to pick up on that thread, Amelia, because I think I missed some of the subtext in that. when I was reading your reporting on this.
Sure.
This piece about, but wait, the building is partly attractive now because artists were the one that turned it into something attractive, into something that made other people pay attention. It was an abandoned building until the artists made art there.
Yeah, I mean, there's also a big open lot in the back, which developers found, you know, were certainly attractive to developers to build. And actually, that's been very useful. I think Bill can attest to this. In the case of Humphrey Street, there is space to develop housing, which they're planning to do, and that's going to help. That made it much more possible. Is that right? Am I getting that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah.
So that's really interesting, too. So the part of the strategy here, so we stipulate a vibrant art community makes a vibrant Greater Boston community. And we stipulate that's hard to do when there's attractive real estate that could be much more profitable than artists can allow it to be.
Yes.
So now, Bill, we have this situation where sometimes there are these opportunities because there's a way to get creative about the profitability part that preserves the artist part. Is that what you did here?
Yeah, that's the whole challenge is being creative to make it financially feasible. It's really hard, whether you're talking affordable housing or affordable artist live work or workspaces, is how do you bridge that gap between what that property can, you know, afford to borrow and its market value. And, you know, we're out there in the community competing with luxury housing developers and, you know, life science developers who have, you know, all the money in the world. So that's the real challenge.
So you own New Atlantic Development. You could do any kind of development. Why do you do this?
I've been doing this for 27 years, and I, you know, focus mostly on affordable housing. You know, we develop mixed-use properties, mixed income, and affordable housing. And you know, I enjoy the challenge. I like real estate. I don't like sort of the cutthroat market rate, you know, side of real estate. It's dominated by real estate investment trusts and speculation and all that. And I love the people I work with. I love artists.
Done a few of these kind of things.
I've done a few, a few of them. And that's a big part of it. You really get to know the people because it's a real partnership. I've been meeting with a steering committee of the tenants every week for over 2 years.
So you really do get to know them.
Yeah.
So we're talking about artist displacement strategies to avoid that, new opportunities to find profitable ways to take property and keep it for artists. You've just heard from Bill Hardy, who's the owner of New Atlantic Development. Also here, WBU Arts and Culture reporter Amelia Mason. Now, Amelia, there's been sort of a spate of these. You just reported recently on the Foundry, very different model.
Yeah.
And that one's really interesting, too, and also seems both exciting and scary
yeah.
in terms of what they had to put together and what they have to hold
yeah.
together.
That's very different. The Foundry is in Cambridge. It's an old foundry, in fact. It's a big building that the city of Cambridge acquired, like, more than 10 years ago. Or about 10 years ago, I guess, is when the actual acquisition went through. But it was a developer wanted to do something in Kendall Square, and as often happens, they need some relief in the zoning part of things. And the deal that was struck, and I wasn't in on these meetings, but the deal that was struck was the city said, okay, you can do your development plans, and the developer said, okay, here, have this building. And they gave it to the city of Cambridge. So the city of Cambridge got this big space.
Yes, that seems unusual.
It is, but it also isn't, because this is something that City of Boston, I know, is trying to make happen more. But setting that aside, then they had to figure out what to do with it. And that's where the money came in, and that's where the expense happened, and that's where all the community planning had to happen. And it was a much longer road even than, I know Bill feels like 3 years with Humphrey Street is like almost killed him or whatever, but like this was like a decade of Cambridge where they, you know, had community meetings and they were like, what are we going to use this space for? And people had a lot of different ideas, and artists were a big part of that. My understanding is a lot of them showed up to these meetings and were like, you know, and this was 10 years ago, it was already happening. It's been happening for a long time. We need space to work. We need dance studios. We need, you know, whatever, workspace on anything like that, maker space generally. And then there were other stuff, community uses that there was interest in as well.
And there's a lot of different uses in the Foundry.
There are.
Black box theater.
There's a black box theater. There's a dance studio, as I mentioned. There's some artist workspace. There's also like a wood workshop kind of, a couple different workshop. There's like, you know, fabrication stuff. There's 3D printers. There's also like office space. There's conference rooms for rent. And in fact, somewhere in this journey, they had originally, I thought this was fascinating. The city had hoped to work with a developer, a for-profit developer who would take over, you know, the financing and stuff and make a plan that could like meet some of these needs that the community wanted, but also like make up, you know, figure out their own thing. And at some point there was concern that that would just lead to not a lot of community use, not a lot of public space, because they would need to recoup the money that they're spending on what would have to be a big renovation. And instead the city took it over and funded this huge renovation itself, which is pretty unusual. Most cities are not in a position to do that.
So let's come back now to Bill Hardy and the Humphrey Street Studios. You've been talking to artists there for 2 years. So what kind of art is getting made? Give us some examples of what is going to stay in Humphrey Street Studio.
Yeah, it's a little bit of everything. You know, when you say artists, people think of, you know, fine art and people sitting around painting pictures, you know, but it's a lot more than that. There are furniture makers, cabinet makers, metalsmiths, scenic designers, graphic designers. So, you know, these are small businesses. You know, you're not just supporting artists, you're supporting small businesses. Some of these businesses actually employ people. So there's a little bit of an economic, you know, development aspect to this.
So let's talk about what can be done. And I find this really interesting, Bill and Amelia, because on the one hand, Amelia, you're talking about the Foundry. Really, that's a city stepping up in a lot of different ways. Bill, this was a private enterprise, whereas I understand it, you cobbled together a lot of different financing sources to get this done.
With some support from the city too, though, right?
Yeah. It was three different offices from the city, Mayor's Office of Housing, Mayor's Office of Arts and Culture, and Economic Development and Inclusion. And we got a loan from Blue Hub Capital and LISC Boston.
So what else can cities and towns do?
Well, it's about the money. I mean, you know, if Cambridge made a huge investment in the Foundry, which made that possible, you know, saving commercial artist spaces is really difficult because there aren't subsidy programs out there for that.
Meaning it's not like there's some program in the federal government where you say, right, I'm applying to the fund for saving art space for communities.
Yeah, right. He means specifically like commercial, like because when you have live workspaces, you can get housing subsidies.
Interesting.
That's kind of where we're going. This has been a real struggle, the commercial side of it.
The purely commercial just doesn't have that same support. And yet the same forces that are making housing less and less affordable are putting financial pressure on these kinds of spaces as well. Is that right?
Exactly. Yep.
All right. So if you had a wish list, pretend there were three mayors sitting here on this side of the table and they're like, gee, Bill, tell me exactly what I can do. What would you put on the top two things you'd like to see them do?
A dedicated program for funding commercial artist studios.
Yeah.
Number one. Number two, supporting organizations that are focused on the greater question and not just looking at one-off projects, but taking on artist displacement as a whole.
So, Amelia, what do we know about whether cities and towns are doing that and what comes next?
Yeah, I mean, I can say, having had a lot of conversations with the Office of Arts and Culture earlier this year, back in the spring, they do want to make that fund a reality because, you know, different things have been tried. You can do zoning things where you say, okay, a developer in this section has to put like X amount of square footage towards cultural use. And when you build little pockets of cultural things in bigger developments, it seems to not go towards much. It's maybe does not very useful. It's not built the way that people need it. Artists weren't in the room when
it
was designed. And so I'm talking to Cara Elliott Ortega, who's the chief of arts and culture, in Boston, what they would really love is to be able to use maybe zoning or something along those lines to leverage when developers, kind of like what happened in Cambridge, want to do something, they have to chip into a fund, for example. I mean, that would be, I think, a dream for them. And then they would have this pot of money and they could give grants towards capital projects like Bill's.
So, Amelia, and we're speaking with Amelia Mason, WBUR arts and culture reporter right now as we talk about artist displacement, commercial artist space, et cetera. We've also had Bill Hardy here from New Atlantic Development. You know, you've got stories that go back 3-4 years on this easily, Amelia. I was looking at one of your stories.
Yes, I know. I do a lot.
it's because it's been an issue for a while.
Yeah, it keeps happening, yeah.
So in this moment, are you feeling, understanding you care about artists, you said that at the beginning, optimistic about the trajectory here, or worried, or a bit of both?
I mean, it's easy for me to feel optimistic when I talk to all the people who can pull the power levers and they say, well, we really want to do this and we are doing it. And having gotten to, you know, the privilege of reporting on some actual success stories like Humphrey's, you know, I remember when it first came up talking to Bill and he was like, yeah, I think it's going to happen. And then like a year later, like there was a cash offer on the property and like the artists were freaking out. And Bill was like, it's not going to. You were like actually really weirdly confident. I was like, he's very chilled out about this.
And he was right.
He was right. And it finally did happen. Where am I going with this? Sorry. Yeah. So, I mean, I can be optimistic. I think some of the artists are really scared. A lot of them have already been pushed out.
Yeah. All right. Amelia Mason is arts and culture reporter at WBUR. Bill Hardy, owner of New Atlantic Development. Amelia, we're going to keep watching this with you. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Bill, thanks to you, too.
Thank you.